we have cash in our pockets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
if we're lucky.
If I go to buy a burger or I go to buy a beer, I pull cash out of my pocket, I buy it. That's a completely anonymous transaction, right? You know, it's just, you know, I get my beer. We don't need to know who we are, and we don't need to know, no one else needs to know what just happened. Bigger transactions, sure. You know, you buy a house, let's get some documentation. So there's been a whole movement of people who said, well, online, if we want to do anything, even if we want to subscribe to a magazine for $5 a month, we have to give a credit card number, which suddenly means we've got a bank in the middle and they're charging the merchant, you know, 2.5-3%. They're logging the whole thing. We're paying our credit card fees. You know, isn't this a bit expensive? And isn't it a bit, you know, why are we logging this whole thing? So there's been a movement to create the digital equivalent of cash online, that I can buy things online, but then there's no record of, you know, who and how and what went on. And there's been a number of attempts at this over the years, but Bitcoin is the first one that really kind of worked. I suppose that's the easiest way of explaining it.
So who invented the Bitcoin?
This we don't actually know. This is one of the weird mysteries of the internet. Back in 2008, someone published an academic paper describing the incredibly complex mathematics of a system, which he called Bitcoin, that would make it possible for you to trade these anonymous amounts of money and yet at the same time have it verified as legitimate. And the paper, it had as the author's name, Satoshi, I'm going to get his surname wrong, but Satoshi, I'll just say. And yet we know there is no mathematician of this name around. There's been some speculation of who it might be. Maybe it's one person, maybe it's a group of people, but we honestly don't know. So he set up all of the mathematics of it, and people then implemented that in computer code, and it's turned into a real currency, and people are buying and trading it. But we actually don't know where it came from.
So if a normal person like me, not a technology writer like you, wanted to get my hands on a Bitcoin, where do I go?
Well, the easiest thing is just punch Bitcoin into your search engine of choice on the internet and you'll soon find it. But there's essentially two elements you need. You'll need what is called a Bitcoin wallet, either on your computer or your phone, or there are people who have services on the internet to say, I will be your Bitcoin wallet for you. I'd kind of say don't go for the latter one. It's a bit like saying, hello, random person, you can take care of my cash until the weekend. You know, it's like, nah, don't do that. But some software that you can download to your computer or phone, and then you have a way of storing the Bitcoin as digital currency on your computer or phone. And then there are a number of currency exchanges around the world, which, just like the currency exchange at the airport or wherever, you hand them Australian dollars, American dollars, whatever it is, they'll convert it into Bitcoin at the current exchange rate, and it'll all happen then. You know, you'll get an email telling you you now have whatever value of Bitcoin, and it magically turns up in your wallet.
Are many people online accepting Bitcoins? I've got to say, every time I go online, I only have a few options, and Bitcoins have never popped up as an option.
Well, exactly right. I mean, we're talking about stuff that's at the bleeding edge of new technology. So most of the established retailers online are going, nah, go away. But there are various places that will accept Bitcoin. And again, if you search around, you know, you search for Bitcoin and Queensland, and you'll soon find a list of retailers who might accept it. Now, it's mostly for online things because a digital currency makes sense in the digital world online. But you'll find weird stuff. There's actually a pub in Sydney where you can pay at the bar in Bitcoin. and you just, you know, smartphone your thing through and go to the bar. Say, oh, yeah, I'll have, you know, there's, you know, six schooners, thank you, and I'll have my round. And, you know, you send them off and there it goes. There's actually a meat producer in the northern part of New South Wales who deliver, you know, they'll certainly deliver up into your neck of the woods, where you can order beef and pay in Bitcoin online. They actually have a fascinating system where they will actually pre-order the beef. So you say, oh, I want, you know, 10 kilo of sirloin and this, that, and the other. And what they do is they take your order and they actually don't slaughter the steer until they've got enough orders to cope with the whole steer, and then they slaughter it, package it up, and send it off. And they accept Bitcoin. And the argument is not because it's anonymous. They don't care about that. You know, it can't be anonymous. They need to actually ship you the beef. But from their point of view, the kind of fees involved in handling Bitcoin are minuscule compared to the, you know, as I said, the 2.5%, 3% merchant fee that a bank would charge them for a credit card transaction.
It's interesting that you mentioned beer and meat, because my hubby, who's the IT department in our household, knows a little bit about a lot of things, and he reckons that Bitcoins are mainly used to buy drugs, pornography, and for gambling online because the currency flies under the radar. Any data to confirm his theory?
I can confirm your husband's theory. He's a wise man. You know, I mean, obviously, as soon as you get something, I won't say that, you know, it's anonymous. It's more pseudonymous, you know, in that you have an online handle in which you trade your Bitcoin. Yeah, obviously, if something is much harder to trace, it's going to be of interest to drug dealers, money launderers, people running gambling schemes, pornography schemes, and so on. I mean, you know, one goes with the other, shall we say. And that's been the case. There was an online marketplace called Silk Road, which, you know, used Bitcoin as its currency. You know, so to buy anything on Silk Road, you had to buy Bitcoin first and then buy what you wanted in Bitcoin. And Silk Road sold everything from illegal drugs in small or quite large quantities to even assassination services.
Oh, Lord.
Put in the equivalent of $20,000 and a hitman will take care of your business. Now, Silk Road was actually taken down by the FBI a few months ago. Silk Road 2 popped up to replace it, and that in turn has been taken down. So This all represents part of a kind of global war, and that happens at two levels. At one level, it's just people trying to say, hey, the global banking system is a bit old-fashioned and expensive, and we can undercut and offer a better price. But at another level, there is on the internet what I might call the crypto-libertarian movement. It's people, like the libertarians think, you know, I mean, this is paraphrasing it, and this is not doing their political philosophy justice, but all government is evil. You know, taxation is theft. We should just be able to get on and run our businesses, you know, and pay for the services we like. So there's that libertarian aspect. But the crypto part comes from cryptography, being able to encode things. And there's certainly, I don't want to say an element of people on the internet, but I think a strong minority, certainly a very powerful but perhaps small number of people who think, well, using this kind of technology, we can escape the whole nation-state system of being taxed on everything and so on. And they see this kind of technology as a way to create a kind of society of the future free from government. Now, that's an idealistic thing. But at the same time, we can see that the internet is, I mean, the internet is a global thing. And around the world, countries are having problems dealing with the legal systems of the internet because it's, you know, they're all trying to do legal stuff country by country by country, but the internet is a cross-border thing, a global thing. And so there is a bit of tension there. And, you know, maybe some sort of global, inexpensive and anonymous for small transaction payment systems is something that should be there. I mean, as I said at the very beginning, if I go and buy a hamburger, it's not like the person at the hamburger shop is asking me for photo ID and writing down my name and address.